This is a Connectability Radio production. Enhancing language development through visual teaching strategies with Heather McRoberts.
My name is Heather McRoberts. I have worked in the area of child care for about 18 years. Before 4 years ago, I switched over to working for preschool speech and language services. So yeah, I hide my age well. I'm old. I'm also the mother of two teenage girls. That's trouble in itself. My interest in sort of children with special needs as well as children with language difficulties goes way back. I have a younger brother who was born at 6 months, 1 week, and has both a hearing loss and some language difficulties, as well as his wife is completely deaf. So it's sort of where some of my interest has come throughout my life with children with difficulties. For 13 years, I was a resource teacher working with children that have special needs, and I continue to work with children with special needs working for preschool speech and language. A lot of the children that say have more than just a language delay often get referred to me, where I work on behavior, I work on social, I work on play skills, as well as their language, because quite often all of that runs into each other. A child that doesn't have a lot of language, you'll often find a lot of behavior problems coming out because they don't have another way to either tell you what they want or get across that they're frustrated about something. I will apologize if my voice goes up and down. I am just getting over a cold, so please let me know if you can't hear me, but I do tend to have a fairly loud voice. So communication. When we think about communication, what do you think of? Just call some answers out.
Express yourself.
Express yourself how? Verbally, written, email, signs, gestures, a baby crying, is that communication?
Yes.
Here's the dictionary meaning. A process by which information is exchanged between individuals through a common system of symbols, signs, or behaviors. Because I'm communicating right here. As my daughter calls it, the look. She knows when I get the look. Or to transmit information, thought, or feeling so that it is satisfactorily received or understood. And that's a key point I want you to remember. It's got to be understood by both parties. Children communicate to satisfy their wants and needs. We all know the kid is having the temper tantrum because they really, 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 really want that toy or that chocolate bar that's always right by the cash. They want to get something or they want to control someone. How many have had kids try to control them? And they do it sometimes very well. To establish or maintain social contact, where we talk to each other when we want to establish a social contact, to express their feelings, to respond to their surroundings, to get information. Everybody in their class has that kid that's the why kid, right? Why? That was my second one. Why? 150 times a day. To tell about an experience. They're very excited. They got to tell you everything that happened. Some things that their parents hope they wish they didn't tell you about that happened on the weekend. So I used to say to parents sometimes when they'd come in and say, well, Johnny told me that this happened at daycare yesterday. And I said, if you don't believe everything he tells you happens here, I won't believe everything he tells me happens at home too. There's different forms of communication. The first thing a baby learns when they're born is crying. You know, crying lets us know that something's wrong. They're hungry, they need to be changed, they need to be, you know, to fed, drink, they're uncomfortable, they're hot. Their facial expressions. And sometimes I don't think we pay enough attention sometimes to the facial expressions. A child can be, who doesn't have words, can really be communicating by looking at something and looking at you. I mean, they're telling you, I really want that. I don't know how to tell you, but I really want what's on the table there. And they show emotions, feelings, body language. Something I had to learn early is I have low blood pressure, so I'm always cold. So I tend to stand like this. And it wasn't until someone pointed out to me, that's a very closed stance. And I didn't mean anything by it. I'm just cold. I mean, right now my fingers are freezing, but that's a normal thing for me. But to another person who doesn't know me, this is a very, you know, closed, unapproachable stance to be in. Gestures, you know, pointing, you know, come here, stop. Verbal, we start out with sounds, then it changes into jargon. You know, then you get some single words, then you get the words, a couple of words together, and then you go right up onto your sentences. Then you have symbols, pictures, and then we have the written word. Any questions or anything anybody can see to add to this? To communicate, you need two things. You need a sender and a receiver there. You have to send the information in a form that can be understood by the receiver. And the receiver must understand the message being sent and be able to make some sort of a response. So we think about, you know, when you're if people are speaking two different languages, we've already got a problem. Because we're not understanding each other's message. Understanding of language is called receptive. So if you hear somebody talking about receptive language, that's what you're understanding is. Children first need to understand language before they're ever going to use the language. Same as when you're learning a new language. Like, you need to understand that, you know, this is a book before you're ever going to use that word book. So you have that silent time while the child is taking everything in and understanding the language that's being said. Production of language is called expressive. And that's, you know, what we express. Excuse me. What we verbalize, what we write down, that's expressing language too. Both the receiver and the sender need to be able to understand the form of communication. You know, for a child who's nonverbal, if that child's busy doing this, but the receiver doesn't know what the heck this is, that's not a good form of communication. And that's a downfall to signing. Because unless that person knows sign language, you're right, it's more. and that's where sign language can break down. Some of it's very easy, you know, to eat, to drink. But, you know, if you don't know some of these things, it's not the best form. Communication difficulties, so problems with communication, can occur in the understanding of language or in the production of language. So you can have a problem on either end. Children will learn only if they can make sense of what they hear. And that's why often with young children, we automatically do it with babies. You label, you just give that one word. But, you know, if a child is hearing whole long sentences like the way I'm talking, to the child, that could be abba-zabba-zabba-zabba-zabba-zabba. That could be like the sentence that I'm using. So they have to be able to make sense of what they hear. They need to understand language before they try to speak it. Otherwise, you get what's called echolalic language. Like if I say, get shoes, and the child says, get shoes, coat on, coat on. They're just saying exactly what I said, but there's no understanding of those words going in. So you want to use those words while you're actually, you know, getting a coat on or getting shoes on to help with their understanding. Also, echolalic language, the child won't use it unless someone has said it first, because they're echoing exactly what's been said. Children need a lot of motivation to take words that they now understand and say them. Again, the teacher needs to model developmentally appropriate language many times before you'll hear a child say it. Especially if it's ESL and they're learning a new language, a second language, often you have a quiet period while they're figuring it all out. Then you'll also have some children who will just use the words when they're comfortable. I mean, I consulted to a daycare who they were very worried about this child would not speak when there was an adult around. But what slowly started to happen was out on the playground, suddenly you'd hear her talking with the other kids. As soon as an adult even sort of went close to try and listen, that was it. Until her comfort level came around, which took months for her to actually use the words she was learning with an adult there. So sometimes it can also be situational. When they're nervous, when they're not sure of themselves, those words aren't gonna come out in a new situation. I mean, I'm sure as childcare teachers, you've all heard, you know, when the kids first go to junior kindergarten, oh, he's not speaking in my class. And you're thinking, my, I wish he'd be more quiet in my class. It's until they're comfortable with that new situation. Learning to talk. Just very quickly, I'm sure you're all up to date on this, but when a child's first learning to talk, that could be because they're a baby, they're just learning to talk. Could be ESL, you're just learning to use this language. Could be a late talker. And some children are, for whatever reason, they're just late talkers. They don't start to talk at that 9 months to a year like a lot of children do. We want to model language that's one step above the child. So if a child is saying nothing, you want to model lots of single words. If the child starts using single words, then you want to say two words. And then if it's saying two, you want to say three, as you keep building. And the big thing, we all want very well-mannered children. But things like please and thank you and colors and numbers, leave those until they have a little more language. When a child's first learning language, we want to have functional words. You know, help, more, my turn, mine, those types of words. Often we are so unaware of it, but we'll say ball, ball, say ball, say ball. He can say ball, he really can't. Say ball, say ball. But do you feel any kind of pressure with that kind of talk? And quite often parents, teachers, we all don't realize that we're saying that there. Or, what's this? What's this? Come on, tell me, what's this? What's that? What's this? What's that? And one parent said to me this morning, she came back from last week, and she says, oh, he is saying a few new words, and he's got some bad habits. And I said, well, what bad habits? Well, when I say to him, ball, say ball, say ball, he goes, nope. I said, is no a new word? Yes, it was. I said, well, one, he's using it. It's got power. What kind of reaction do you give him? It gets a reaction from you. And I said, also, he's reacting to your pressure. Say, say, say. Mom was not aware that she was using that a lot of the time. You know, I have a mother, you know, my mother got the book. I'm modeling single words. What's that? What's that? What's that? What's that? And the child is like, you know what? I don't want any part of this. So just little things to be aware of. Receptive, common difficulties. Some children have a difficulty to attend. They don't process the information as it's going in. They may be sitting there looking right at you, but if there's some kind of a process difficulty going through their brain, you may not be aware of that in the beginning, but it's just something to, you know, sometimes you get that, they said, oh, he just doesn't listen. Now, there are some children who don't listen. But often there can be, do a little observation, because sometimes there can be other things that are going on. Sometimes they can't retain that information. It goes in, and literally it's gone again. They could be very distractible. They heard what you said, but oh my gosh, then they saw this. And that just took all their attention away from that. Examples, you can have hearing difficulties. If ever you're working with children who you think might have a language delay or have a problem, the first thing you want to check out is for any physical reason why they're not having it. And that's to get a hearing test. Whenever parents are referred, children are referred to our service, that's the first thing we'll ask parents is, you know, have you had a hearing test? Well, it might be a good idea. That just rules something out right off the bat. My second daughter, when she was 3 years old, she actually spoke quite well, but spoke very loudly. And when I had her hearing tested, she flatlined in both ears. She had lots of ear infections, but we weren't aware as to how much. You know, yeah, we turned the TV up, and yeah, we turned the radio up, but when I have a brother and sister-in-law who are deaf, we're very loud, we talk with our hand, we weren't really aware of it. I mean, she's had tubes 3 times and had her tonsils out, her adenoids out, and she's fine. But again, just sometimes things to be aware of there. There could be a developmental delay, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome. There can be learning disabilities. And at the preschool age, they're probably not diagnosed yet. Learning disabilities don't usually show up in their full sort of fullest form or aren't really diagnosed until they're in school. There, but you could have the beginnings of things that you're seeing with preschoolers. You have a language barrier, ESL, and ASD. Are people familiar with that term, ASD? Autism Spectrum Disorder. It's the new word for the whole umbrella of, used to be called PDD, Pervasive Developmental Disorder. Now ASD is the words that you will hear out there. And children who have ASD have some definite difficulties with social, behavior, sensory, language deficits. You can also have a central auditory processing disorders. And that's, they hear the message, but there's a real problem decoding information that's coming in. There's probably a lot more. I just tried to give you a little taste of some of the things that could be going on. And often at the preschool age, they're not diagnosed yet. So, you know, you're sort of the first people who could be looking or seeing that there might be something just not quite right. So difficulties in expressive, it's difficulties in verbal expression. You could have a physical problem, like low muscle tone in the mouth area. A lot of children with Down syndrome, they have low muscle tone sort of throughout their body. So if you have low muscle tone in your cheeks and your jaw and your tongue, you know, it makes it very hard to pronounce the words properly. There. You can have a cleft lip or a cleft palate. You can often see a repaired cleft lip. It's when the, you know, lip actually comes up here. The palate is the top of your mouth. Some children actually are born with a hole. It's not covered over. Those are all corrected with surgery at a very, very young age now. They are usually automatically referred to the speech department. Not all need therapy. Yes?
What causes the low muscle tone?
It can be a variety of reasons, like cerebral palsy, you have low muscle tone or very rigid muscle tone. Down syndrome, it's part of Down syndrome, if they have low tone throughout their body. I mean, some kids just have low, you know, muscle sort of through the jawline.
But on a regular basis, for example?
Yep. You can have children who just sort of have some low muscle tone. You can have oral motor difficulties where the muscles in the mouth and the face just aren't working together. Sound production difficulties. Some children just have trouble with certain sounds. You know, they may substitute a W in for, you know, a whole, it's a woggy, not a doggy. Or, you know, they're using G's for D's, there's, you know, they're leaving off S's, that kind of thing. And again, there's learning disabilities. Again, dyslexia is when you turn letters backwards. There. And again, there's many others. I'm just trying to give you a flavor of some of the things that are out there. I just want to touch a little bit on anxiety. If a child is really anxious or nervous, or yourself, if you're really anxious or nervous, you know, you might get all mixed up in your words, or you're not sure what to say there, especially with children that have ASD, it will decrease their language learning capacity. Just think, if you're really nervous or anxious about something, can you take in everything that's being said to you? You know, or can you remember everything you were supposed to say because you're really, really nervous about what you're doing? It's the same for a child, and sometimes we don't think about that. You know, they're new to your room, they're new to your center. They just moved from another room to your room, which, you know, shouldn't be a big deal because they've been here before. You know, suddenly we're here every day. You know, sometimes it can be things going on at home that we're not aware of there. But if a child is in that anxious state, you're not going to get as much language as they would normally. You also, if they're anxious or upset, you're going to increase the likelihood of getting some behaviors because they're so nervous and strung out. You know, extra things are going to bother you. Just like they might when you're anxious at home, you know, something happens, you know, your kid drops something, which, you know, on a normal day that might just be, oh, well, it's an accident. But today you fly off the handle about it because you're just so worked up about something else there. There's also sensory issues. This is a big concern in the ASD population, but lots of people have sensory issues. That little sound that just drives you nuts, or that sound is taking all your attention rather than you know, being able to focus on other things. My husband's a mechanic by trade, so he's been trained to listen for all those little bumps and things when you're in a car. Something I don't notice will drive him absolutely insane, because he's been trained to listen for all those squeaks, rattles, and groans, where he'll get in my car and go, how long has that been doing that? And I said, I don't know. I don't even hear it. You can be hypersensitive, which is oversensitive to something, or you can be hyposensitive, which you're understimulated. For some children, you know, that kind of a touch is like, ow! You know, it feels like somebody just slugged them. You know, to another child, you could be doing deep rubbing, and the child's really not doing much reaction to it at all. So you can be hypersensitive or hyposensitive to things. Sight, bright colors, designs on clothing, that can actually hurt their eyes if you're very sensitive to things that you're looking at. Excuse me. They might like to see spinning objects. They really like to watch those spinning objects. Holding objects close to the face, they like that. Looking out the corner of their eye, that might be a neat thing to do if they're get sensory input with their sight. Fluorescent lights. What we don't know is fluorescent lights actually have a very, very high-pitched hum. We don't hear it. We're so used to them. Or you might hear it when you first come in a room, and then you block it out. For some children, if they're very sensitive to that, that drives them nuts.
Like my daughter.
She
wanted it to be changed. It was in the room before, and she was standing there. She said, "Why can't I bear it?"
Well, that's a hearing thing. Sometimes it's the brightness, or it can be the sound.
The humming sound.
Yep, the humming.
And I never heard it.
And to some people, that's a drum. That sound is like a drum to them. And so sometimes children may get upset in your room, and you don't know why. Years ago, I had a little boy who, you put the music on, didn't matter if it was like lullaby music or whatever it was, that was like, you know, you put it on low to him, that was just like, as soon as you turned it off, a child crying. He'd go like this immediately as soon as a child was crying. So he was very hypersensitive to the sounds. Fluorescent lights, we talked about that, music, singing voices. Smell. Some children like to smell things really close. Who's had the smelly markers when they were big? And the kids got 8 dots on the end of their nose because they've been smelling those markers. There. Sometimes a smell can upset them. And that's hard to know sometimes. If a child just starts crying in your room and you know, can't really communicate with you yet, but it could be the smell of, you know, the paint or something there. Some children have to smell all their foods before they'll eat it. And if they don't like the smell, it isn't going anywhere near this mouth. There. Taste. There are some kids who just cannot stand certain textures in their mouth. Be it, you know, rubbery fish, or sometimes it's that smooth jello, porridge. Anything soft, and that's just, you know, a sensory. Some children have trouble with teeth brushing. I'm just trying to give you a flavor of things that you can be watching out for, that behaviors may come up that you think there's no reason for, but there could very well be a reason for. Touch, we talked about too light, too heavy. Some children like a light touch, some need that very firm touch. Does anybody have children in their program who like to take their socks and shoes off all the time? Some like, it's that feeling. They want that feeling on the floor, the firmness, their feet on the floor. They don't want cushy socks and shoes and slippers. on. You know, sometimes I've had people say to me, he strips, like he takes off his clothes. It could be the fabric. If it's too sheer, if it's too thick, if it's itchy, tags on the back of shirts. You know, we're not always aware of them. If that's just doing that little bit of scratching on their back, if you've got a touch sensation, that just can drive them nuts.
Can you help them get over it?
You can do like a desensitizing sort of program with it. But there are some things that a child will just not be able to tolerate. The child I had with the mashed potatoes, that mushy type stuff, no matter how much we tried, no matter how much, you know, you added ketchup or you know, thickened it or thinned it, or it just became something that he could not tolerate. Often with clothing, it's finding out the clothing that he can tolerate or can't. Is it because it's long-sleeved? Is it because it's short-sleeved? Does the child get too hot? Does he get too cold? Tags is something you can, it's an easy one to try and see if that's the problem. Sometimes you just need to stay away from certain fabrics there. If it's a problem that you're really not sure how to handle, OTs, occupational therapists, are someone who you can go into more detail with and sort of figuring out and what you can do about a lot of the sensory issues. Just a few statistics. From Health and Welfare Canada, 10% of Canadian preschoolers have communication disorders of some sort. I mean, some people think that's not much, and some people think that that's pretty staggering if you think of 10% of all children have some kind of a communication. On any given day, 1 in 5 preschoolers is experiencing some kind of a hearing loss. That can be they've got a cold and they're plugged up. They've got an ear infection. They're plugged up. I'm not talking about a permanent hearing loss. But so think about any one of your classrooms. You could have 3 or 4 children who are not hearing properly. I mean, yesterday, they could have been fine and listening to you. So now you're thinking, oh, he's just not listening to me. You know, he's having a bad day. He's not listening. You know, there could be some other factors there, especially as we now head into the fall and winter months. And that's why sometimes when we refer children for a hearing test, they could come out clear today, and 2 weeks later they go for a hearing test and they're not, or vice versa, which can be frustrating for a parent. And that's what I did with my second daughter. We went back and forth because we'd have a hearing test and it would show something in one ear. We'd go back and it would be clear. Then we'd go back and both ears were flatlining. So it fluctuates. So just be aware of that. When you're looking at the special needs population, for children who have a diagnosed special need, the numbers are much higher. It's about 70% have a communication problem. Thinking about kids that have, you know, physical disabilities, mental disabilities, they're looking about 70% that they have a communication difficulty. Not that they don't communicate, they've got some difficulties in their communication. As child care workers, you are often the first person to recognize that a child might be having difficulty in one or more areas. Because sometimes we just keep thinking, well, I can see it. Why doesn't the mom see it? You know, why don't they get it? Well, if it's their only child... Well, sometimes, but if it's an only child, when they go home at night, they have no one to compare it to. You also have a background in child development, but you're also looking at 16 or 15 other kids at the same time. That mom who picks up her child and may come running in and running out and takes their child home, when she sees them as on an individual basis, they don't notice, you know, a lot of the things. You also see the child in social situations. You know, parents will say to you, well, it's a problem here at daycare, because I don't have a problem with his behavior at home. He's fine with me at home. Because at home he's not competing with 16 other kids for someone's attention or to get that toy there. You see more of that social situation where the parent may not. If the child is around a lot of adults and not with a lot of the other kids, a lot of the families that come to us that their children are at home with the parents, we really encourage them to go out to the early years centers, to look at nursery schools, to look at child care programs, even if it's part-time. because often that's when parents can see that compared to Johnny, who's 3.5, and my Betty, wow, you know, now we can see some difficulties. And I mean, there are some parents who, yes, just will not accept, not my Johnny. You know, it's your problem. It's not my Johnny. You can't reach everyone. Some of them will get a rude awakening when they go to school. I've already had 3 phone calls. Everyone's telling me there's something wrong with my child. And I'm thinking, we've been telling you that for a little while. Again, not there's something wrong, that, you know, he has some areas that we need to work on. You know, you may be going along singing your tidy up song because it's time to go out to the playground. But if the child has not figured out, like, I'm playing. What do you mean you're suddenly taking my toys away? Like, I don't want to go to the playground. Or they might not know that word playground yet. You've got an ESL issue, you've got whatever. And that's what we're going to talk about, visuals. About, you know, being able to hold up a picture that it's bathroom time or that it's lunch time or whatever. So the child goes, oh, okay, I'm tidying up because, you know, this is going to happen. There. With children that have ASD, this is often the problem, is they don't understand all of the world around them. So they don't understand that, you know, we're tidying up because we're going to go and get something that's just as equally as good, but they don't know that. So transition times can just be off the wall until they understand what's coming next. Children need to understand the words before developing verbal communication. We talked about that. When you're working with a child who has a developmental delay, that they're learning a little slower, or it could be ESL, it will take longer for them to understand the communication and then to learn how to respond to it. So it's not that they're ignoring you or they're not listening today or whatever. You know, a child, if you know that they're a little behind in their development, it will take them longer to understand the words and to figure out then how to make a response. So just to give you some basic strategies that are coming around there. Children learn best while they're doing the activity that you're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, rolling the Play-Doh, they're going to associate, like understand it and associate it better while you're actually rolling the Play-Doh out. You know, rather than talking about Play-Doh as you're walking down the road looking at leaves, they don't have that association to go with it. When they have the object there to manipulate or to associate the word with. Same as if you were, I always try to associate it with, if you were trying to learn another language there. You know, if you had the item right in front that you're learning the new word for, it's going to have more meaning for you because you've got the object. Okay, this is what, you know, this is what this is here. An action accompanies the word. Like if you're talking about jumping, here, but if you're actually, you know, jumping while you're talking about it, or the animal's jumping, or whatever, child's going to learn the understanding of it a lot quicker. Now they start jumping on the beds, too. You can have a real picture or a photo, like if you don't have the item there, having a picture of the item can help. And often, especially children who are just learning or younger, a real photo works better, and then you can sort of work up to like a drawing of a photo later. And then abstract drawings, different drawings, and printed words. If you're ever going to use pictures or anything like that, have the printed word with the picture. Use mine out of here. So these are just some basic things to try and remember sort of all the time, is try to talk to the child from close to them. It's really hard to be going, Johnny, Johnny, get down, down, Johnny, get down. Like, there's all kinds of noises, all kinds of things in between you and the child. And the child may not think you're talking to him there. But if you're, you know, if you're right here and saying, Johnny, sit down, okay, he knows that you're talking to him and that this is directed at him. Now, we all know those emergency situations where you've got a call from across the playground or whatever. But it's something we see a lot of, you know, Johnny, bring the bike over here. You know, and you're like 20 feet away from him. Trying to be close to the child while you're trying to talk to them. Get the child's attention. Bend down to the child's level. You know, we forget because we're all so tall how it feels when someone is like this over top of you. It is a bit intimidating, you know, because it's, you don't think about it because we're always eye to eye, but that child that's on the floor and you're like this, down at them, it's just things we're not always thinking about. There, try to establish eye contact. Okay, now we've got joint attention. He knows and I know that we're going to have this conversation together now. You know, if the child that's off playing, he can be in his own little world, busy playing here, that, you know, again, oh, okay, now I know he's listening to me because he's focused here. Use the child's name. There. Speak a little slower and in a more clearly pronounced delivery. And I'm not saying drag it all out, but especially if a child you know is learning a little slower or is trying to get a grasp on that English language, you know, if you're just saying, you know, block in the box, block in the box, you know, rather than going, put the box in the box. Again, you're giving him some more cues, saying it a little slower so he can pick it up. There. Again, think about how the child is communicating. So you want to speak just one step above them. If the child is on, like, you're in a toddler room where kids are only using 1, 2, and 3 words, you don't want to be using these great big long sentences with them. Now, if it's to give a direction that you know the child already knows, you can use a long sentence. But if you're doing language so that they can imitate it, then you want to keep down. Like, if you know this child isn't using any language yet, 1 word, 2 words. This child's using 2 to 3 words, so you want to use 3 and 4 words. We always want to show the child what the next step is, what they can add. Because once they start labeling lots of single words, we don't want to stay there. We want to move on. Add gestures, as you see. I'm a real talker with my hands. Associate the words with an action. Slow things down. Give the child more time to watch or to process the information or to form a response. If you're doing a group activity, you know, don't have Johnny go first, second, or third. Let him see the kids take their turn. Let him see them go through it so he learns by the routine. There. And lots of repetition. Especially if children are first learning language. Some children can hear a word 50 times or 100 times, understand it, start to use it. Other children need to hear it 1,000 times before they're ever going to use it again. And often what I find is we get tired of saying the same word before the child does. You know, if a child is really into, I don't know if you know the old Fisher-Price cash register, absolutely love them, so much language with it. But if he's still putting the money in, push button, money out, and if he's still interested, he is still getting something out of it, and he is still in tune with it. And you can, you know, keep going. Money in, push button, uh-oh, you know, because it goes in the drawer. Turn handle, open drawer. You could spend 20 minutes. If the child is still engaged in that, they're hearing those same words over and over again. And often, if you go, uh-oh, they'll come out with the word because they've heard you do that over and over before. And don't try to teach too much at once. You know, the child may be behind and needs to learn, you know, this many things. Okay, you know what? As a team, in your room, in your center, you may even just want to pick, okay, we're going to work on A, E, and G. That's it, okay? And we're all going to work on the same things. It's really hard if one teacher really wants to focus on dressing and somebody else is going to focus on language, and the kid's trying to learn a million new skills all at the same time. You guys have been sitting for a very long time listening to me. You did a great job. I hope I've given you a lot of information and that it's been helpful. I like to make things very practical. Thank you.